Well, good morning. It's Tuesday, the 17th of March. Welcome to the roundtable. It's St. Patrick's Day, and it's very nice to have everybody with us. I just want to make a little programming note, just so you know what you're listening to over the next hour and a half or so. This is the first time we've ever done the roundtable panel because of these extraordinary circumstances, where everybody's going to be at a different location. We are usually at a round table or roundish, rounded, and we have everybody around and looking at each other. And because of these, as I said, extraordinary circumstances, we're all in different places now. And so this is the first day we're doing it, and I hope you will give us a little a little room to figure it out and get better at it. As far as it's weird not looking at the people that you're talking to, so we're going to do our best not to trample on over each other. And some of the feeds will be from phone, and some of them will be from apps, and some of them will be from other people's places. And so we have a mix, and we're thrilled that we have the technology to be able to bring you a show, but we just hope that you'll be patient as we figure out some of the kinks over the next few days. With that in mind, let me introduce everybody. WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning and happy St. Patrick's Day to you. And I go back to Galway, where Roselle and I were in a wonderful hotel. We were told that in Galway they didn't celebrate the way they did in New York, but boy were they wrong.
Yeah, isn't Galway is a great place. I have to say, you know, this is like for me, this is not the way I would normally celebrate St. Patrick's Day, but I guess it is in the true Irish tradition. I just get to go home and drink alone. So that's good.
maybe you can invite Ray over.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Social distancing with a bottle. Yeah. The Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, is here. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
To you, Joe.
It's great to have you. Thank you very much. We also welcome former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Good morning, Mike. I have to press buttons.
Good morning. All right. Yeah, the top of the morning to you.
And the rest of the day to yourself, sir. And we also have the Empire Report's J.P. Miller. Good morning, J.P.
Well, we thought we had him.
Is J.P. with us?
J.P. I read the Empire Report, so I know he's up.
He is connected. Do I have to press anything on the thing here? No? Okay. All right, well, we'll figure that one out. And we will we'll wait and figure that out. But in the meantime, we have a lot to talk about. We welcome everybody. JP, we just talked to him, so we know he's trying to get connected. JP's the one using the app, so it's a new thing that we have, and we're trying to work it out so we can get it together, and that'll happen momentarily. So in the meantime, let's start. And we have a lot to talk about, especially, of course, during coronavirus. Look, there's so much news coming out, and it's coming out so quickly that it's difficult to stay on top of it and to look at, you know, all the aspects of it, whether it's the stock market having, you know, its worst day ever yesterday, and the president saying that, you know, basically we are in a recession or could very well be there very soon. And also that the other extraordinary thing that the president said yesterday is that we're looking to that this what we're in right now is really possible to continue into July or August or even later. Not necessarily all of the quarantining, not necessarily all of the restrictions, but dealing with this major public health issue. Alan, let me start with you, which
Sure.
is the president yesterday, at least in my mind and in viewing him, seemed the tone was different. He seemed much more somber and a bit more realistic.
Well, yes. The problem, Joe, is that if you think about this guy, who once called this all a Democratic hoax, obviously he looks like a deer caught in the headlights. He knows this is it now. he can't, you know, the one thing he's had going for him, he thought, was the stock market, and the stock market is in a shambles. His leadership skills in terms of running, you know, a country that is in the middle of a pandemic has been severely wanting. So he sounds like, as I say, a deer looking into the headlights. He just doesn't know what to do. Obviously, Pence, his vice president, has gotten fairly good marks for the way that he's assembling his group, except for the fact that he keeps talking about how wonderful the president has been. When the president was asked how he was doing, he said he was getting a 10 out of 10. That kind of lying is what led him into this place where nobody believes a word he says anymore. Or I shouldn't say nobody. 30% of the people do believe it, and they're sticking with him no matter what happens. And that's that defies anything that I can understand.
Mike, did you see a difference yesterday or hear a difference?
Yeah, I saw a refreshing change where it was not like maybe a week ago where he was seemed to be focusing on numbers and trying to deflect blame. I mean, he still is doing that to some extent, but I think he is truly recognizing the seriousness of this threat, and it's really important for him to be saying it. It's helpful. However, I think that ship may have sailed, and people are now looking to Dr. Anthony Fauci to understand, or others in the medical industry, in the medical field, to direct them. And what the president says, even if he says the worst case scenario, people are going to be less, swayed by what he says, and much more focusing on what other public health officials are saying. So he may have already spent what little credibility he had, and it's nice to see that he's not getting in the way of what the public health people are doing, and that's important that he not be in the way of that and not encourage people to take this lightly.
Also, Judy, what do you make of it?
You know, I was one among those people who agreed with Bernie Sanders that I just wanted him to stop. I just wanted the president to stop talking, because every time he talked, my chest would tighten with anxiety. I thought it was refreshingly different yesterday, except towards the end where he gave himself a 10 on a scale of 10, and then he was asked how he's talking to his young son Barron about this, and Barron asked if it's bad, and Mr. Trump responded, "Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad." And I thought that was a very horrible response. Then I see a Newsweek poll where 48% of Americans think he's doing a good job with this. I mean, it's not a majority, but who are these 48% of Americans who think this has been a good job?
That's a really interesting point. I did see another poll. There was I'm trying to bring it up right now. There was a NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll that came out where the overwhelming of Americans don't trust what they're hearing from Trump on coronavirus. I'm just trying to make you feel a little bit better, Judy.
Thank you.
46% now say the federal government is doing enough, which is to your point. But just 46%, and 37% said that they have a good amount or a great deal of trust in what they're hearing. 60% say they had not very much or no trust at all in what he's saying. So, this is, I guess, to Mike, to your point of it's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube, or whatever analogy you want to use.
Joe, go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to, say that. I think that it's now in the hands of others, and I'd rather it be in the hands of others. He's missed the opportunity to lead us through this, and we'll look to people like Andrew Cuomo and Gavin Newsom and others across the country, and of course, Dr. Fauci and other leaders who have stepped up. And even then, we're looking, I think, as an American, I'm looking for direction and confidence in the direction I'm being taken. And that's really important.
I believe we have JP Miller on our line. JP, are you there?
Hey, team, I'm on. Yes.
Hey.
Excellent. You sound great. Good for you. All right. So what do you make? We were talking about the president's news conference yesterday. We were saying that he struck a different tone, we thought. And I'm curious as to what you make of that and where we go forward. I mean, to me, the extraordinary thing that he said yesterday, which was very unlike what he has been just saying up to a day ago, was that we're in this for the long haul. I mean, that we're talking about July or August or dot, dot, dot. JP?
Yes, and I think the poll numbers that you guys have been talking about Trump's support, I think that is going to have gone down significantly over the last 5 days. I think Americans are quickly realizing the seriousness of what's happening. I have, you know, family around the country that are kind of at a different place than I feel like us in New York are. They might be 3 or 4 or 5 days of kind of the realization of the gravity of this. And Trump's typical song and dance, which appeals to a certain percent of the country, he can't really turn off that song and dance in a serious time like this. And it's really, really going to hurt him. I think that the market, he is worried about what the market does day by day. And he doesn't realize that he needs to take action now. And the sooner he takes action, the sooner we're going to get through this in the long term, the market and the economy will be better. So yeah, he is truly struggling. And, you know, if the election were tomorrow, I think he'd lose, Biden would have 300 or 400 electoral votes.
Alan,
you know, Joe, I'm going to give a quiz to the group. I'm thinking of a man named H.H. Can anybody tell me who H.H. is?
Herbert Hoover?
That's right. It goes right to what J.P. just said. You know, Herbert Hoover, whether it was fault or not, he got the blame. And boy, was he out of there as a result. And that's when FDR won and the world changed. And I suspect that Trump is now Herbert Hoover.
Now,
please.
Well, Mike, isn't it safe to say, though, you are one that often reminds us of this? It's that may very well be the case, but we're a long way from now to November.
Yeah, I mean, I think if nothing else, what's happened in the last couple of weeks confirms what we already were aware of, and that is that you can't predict what will happen. And the most, I mean, just unbelievable events have happened so far. And that was since 2016 with the election of Donald Trump and things that have happened since then. And now with this coronavirus pandemic, I would not venture to guess what it would be like in 3 weeks, 3 months, and, you know, talking about the stock market, talking about the health and general, well-being of the population, of the world. I mean, this is a seismic kind of change, and it's hard to predict.
Joe.
Alan.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, this is a very bad time for the world and for America. Think about back into your history and when revolutions happened, when people are at unrest, when Mitt Romney was talking yesterday about giving every American $1,000, something that Andrew Yang, of course, had talked about also, in order to keep people fed. But when people aren't fed and when the storehouses are closed, and we have seen this before, anything can happen. So I do think it's incumbent on the people in charge to make sure that we don't get ourselves into one of those stages. You know, we have a president now who's talking about saving people. Saving who? The airlines of all people compared to everyday working Joes who have to feed their families and who have no money and won't have any money to do that. A dangerous time, I think.
Yes, just having, you know, I moved out of New York City 3 years ago. I looked it up this morning. There are 250,000 tipped workers in New York State. Those are bartenders, waiters, waitresses. And those people do not have a job. Those people that depend on tips every day in New York City and around the state. And I do think that the president should be talking about those people and not so much, obviously, the airlines, and also kind of a national call to be ordering takeout from your favorite local restaurant. You know, we need, although those waiters and waitresses and bartenders aren't going to be able to likely be working at those restaurants for the next couple months, those restaurants need to be kept alive as businesses, as sustainable businesses. And the way that we can do that as New Yorkers, especially New Yorkers and Americans, is to order takeout as much as possible. There could be lines at the supermarket. We should be patronizing our favorite restaurants, I think. And where is that call from the White House?
Good point.
You know, if you think about, if you try to get inside the president's head, maybe he in his head thinks this is going to disappear magically in midsummer, and that he'll be able to, you know, to slide into a re-election very easily. But the damage being done even today, even if this virus disappeared magically, the damage is going to take a very long time to repair.
That's
and,
a great.
I think even
we gotta take
a lot of time.
We have to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, all here on the line. And we are talking this morning, of course, about coronavirus and many other things. A quick programming note that at 10:30 this morning, we'll be going to coverage from NPR with the White House's latest briefing on coronavirus. It is expected to begin at 10:30 this morning. If that changes, we will let you know. But as of right now, that is the scheduled time, and we expect to take that beginning at 10:30. We welcome your letters this morning, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We have several. This one from John, who says, in addition to ordering takeout or delivery from your favorite restaurants, consider buying gift certificates. All right. There'll be a time when you can redeem them, we hope. We promise, right?
Yeah, it's a tough, tough time for restaurants. I was reading in the Times Union today about how some restaurants that never ordered, never had takeout menus are scraping to get the necessary, you know, takeout utensils and all the things they will need so that they can begin doing takeout. And that's just to stay in business and keep a couple of people employed, while most people at restaurants have already had really been laid off and are looking to get unemployment. It's a tough time.
It really is. And, you know, I mean, the other part of it, too, which you just have to extrapolate just a little bit, is that I think we all want to help and we want to do takeout and we want to help and buy gift certificates and help our businesses, not just restaurants, but many small businesses and independent businesses. But, you know, we're all, a lot of us are going to be strapped, too, and not have that income that would normally allow us to do those kind of things, which it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out.
And that, Joe, it also includes radio stations. I mean, people depend on this radio station in a way that is just, so I'm not going to lie to anybody. This is going to be a tough time for us also.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's very sobering. We got this letter from Tony, which I think it makes an interesting point. It says, there was something I saw yesterday at the press conference that I'd never seen before, and that is fear in Trump's face. Thanks for keeping the panel together. I love you guys. Well, Tony, thank you. We love you, too. But yeah, that I don't know if I noticed it as fear, but it certainly seemed as sobering, much more so than it had been.
Well, as I said earlier, deer caught in the headlights is not a foreign concept to what he was looking like yesterday. You know, he can't decide whether to keep lying or to just tell the truth. So his last remarks were, you know, mostly this is what we have to do. And then he gets back to blaming other people for what he has been presiding over. It's just awful.
What he was doing during the press conference last week, where he was shaking hands of all the executives and shaking hands of his cabinet members, for those of us at home, I was certainly cringing watching him. And so he now has hopefully come to the realization of how serious this is. He also, I think, may realize that this crisis is potentially how his presidency is going to be defined, and maybe probably how his presidency
is going to be defined.
Yeah.
It will be. And, JP, do you think that he understands what has happened to him, or that he is somehow, you know, oblivious to that?
I don't think he's oblivious to it, but I think that he's been slower on the uptake on this specific situation and a lot of situations, but this one specifically. And you look at past presidencies, it's never what a president does when they orchestrate it. It's what a president does when the moment comes to them. Mm-hmm. And the moment came to President Trump, and everybody's going to remember him saying, it's going to disappear. It's going to be that line, you know, when you ask about George W. Bush, you know, what he said at 9/11, and when Ronald Reagan said, tear down this wall, and what, you know, John F. Kennedy said, you know, that is going to be what I think people are going to remember about the Trump presidency, unless he does something really spectacular.
You know, Trump is his own worst enemy, and the nation would be so far better served if he just stayed in the Oval Office and did not come out and do any of these press conferences.
I just a quick programming note. We just learned that the press conference and the update is now expected at 11:30 this morning. So those of you panelists who thought you'd get off at 10:30, make plans. we're gonna hold you till at least 10:48 as normal. Okay.
Can I go back to the
of course
to JP? You know, who offers us some real balance on this panel, in that, you know, he's been a Republican in the past, and I don't know if he is now, and he has campaigned for Republicans, and we know that. JP, where that 30% that does not move off the dime, everybody I talk to says, how could that be? They watch this guy on television. They know what's going on. What is happening that keeps those people so firmly in the Trump camp?
I think he's losing those people day by day, minute by minute. Those people, you know, Trump's day-to-day antics, which he can't turn off. He is who he is. He can't turn off his personality. His day-to-day antics are, I think, horrific to many Americans, and to his base, they are entertained by his antics. His antics during a scary time like this for our country get very old very quick. And I think that this is something that could truly, truly tear into his base. And I'm consuming a lot of media, so I may not be a great arbiter of how this is going, but I've watched every single one of Andrew Cuomo's press conferences over the last 14 days. And I've never been so impressed with a public official giving sober, factual information, telling people to take this very seriously while remaining calm, taking decisive action, and then watching, you know, how the president is acting. And it's a stark contrast between what the leadership that Cuomo is offering and the leadership that Trump is offering.
We have a couple of letters I want to get to before we have to go to a break in just a moment. Maureen says, and this is to what Judy was talking about earlier, woke up this morning realizing that Trump has now decided to act like Joe Biden. Then he couldn't help himself, Mr. 10 out of 10. It won't last. Do you think it'll last, Judy?
Oh, no, of course. He just cannot help himself. In fact, I can tell you this morning, he's already tweeted, said something mean about Andrew Cuomo in a tweet this morning at 8:22. He says, you know, Cuomo wants all states to be treated the same, but all states aren't the same. And he says, you know, Andrew, keep politics out of it. I don't think Cuomo really has kept politics out of it. He just wants the federal government to help. And he doesn't think that the federal government is giving, you know, New York State and all the states the help they need at this crucial time.
Not only that, he's got, with all of that said, Judy, you're absolutely right about him, about Cuomo, but he also has a sense of humor. I don't know how many people saw it the other day when he was talking to a press conference, and he was talking about the adjacent states, people coming back and forth, and he says, Alan Chartok goes back and forth between Massachusetts and New York. I couldn't get over it.
On national television.
Yeah, it was on every network.
And everybody looked at each other and said, "Who the hell is Alan Chartok?"
The Albany press corps certainly didn't.
Yeah, I think JP nailed it, though. He you're right. I mean, JP, he is who he is, and he can put on the persona of a caring leader, and it just lasts so long, and then it kind of gives out. You're right, Judy. I mean, you know, 10 out of 10, giving himself a 10 out of 10 on handling it. There's no capacity to be humble and hand credit elsewhere. If he gives credit to anybody else, it's because he's taking credit for picking that person to do something. I mean, it's bizarre to watch, and it's tragic. I think it I like I said earlier, I think it'd be just good if he got out of the way and let the professionals take it.
Mike, would humility help him at this stage of the game? In other words, let's say he changed his personality and all of a sudden he got humble. Would it help him?
If he actually got genuinely humble and genuinely empathetic to the plight of not the airlines, you know, and not the major oil companies that are all suffering through this,
or
the
stock market
people,
yeah,
or the stock market, right? But the actual people who you guys were talking about, you know, the hourly workers, the tip workers who are unemployed right now and won't even be able to get much in unemployment. If he had that kind of empathy, I mean, Mitt Romney, for him to suggest a $1,000 payment to everybody is so contrary to you know, his philosophy over the years of people kind of standing up for themselves. But he has compassion. He genuinely sees a need for this, and he's ready to shift because he's capable of it. I don't know that Trump is capable of humility and empathy, Alan.
You know, I remember when Hugh Carey, I'm sure you remember this, was going to lose the election for governor, and somebody gave him some good advice. He got up there and he apologized. He apologized for being, you know, sort of arrogant, and it worked.
Well,
People said, okay, I get it. Yeah, and that's good.
Does anyone on this panel think that's going to happen in this case?
Not me.
No, I don't think it'll happen because I don't think he's capable of being genuinely apologetic. I really don't. I know that's harsh, but
I would love it if he, like Andrew Cuomo and other governors and other mayors has done, and talk about the spirit of Americans and how we can come together and point out some of the ways Americans are helping Americans in this time of need, that people are stepping forth and delivering meals to people who can't get out, that people are helping other people who need child care help. That's happening, but that story is not being told by the president at this point.
We have several letters to get to. I want to get to them. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to start with one that'll bring us on a whole line of really good conversation, I think, about something that happened yesterday. So stay tuned for that. We have Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, JP Miller, and of course we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable on this St. Patrick's Day. We have a great group, Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, JP Miller. We welcome your letters. We are going to go. I have two letters here that I want to read back to back and just let the panel respond to them. One from Ken. Could you please share your thoughts on Ohio's postponement of today's Ohio primary, particularly the possibility of Ohio's Republican governor and Republican secretary of state using this postponement to try to delay the inevitability of a Biden selection? I think that an important benefit to Trump is the continued fracturing of the Democratic Party. That followed up by Juan's note that says, with all these states either potentially or actually delaying their primaries, there needs to be a concerted effort to develop a vote-by-mail process. We cannot give Trump an excuse to cancel the general elections. Alan, let's begin with you of just what happened in Ohio and what we do with the states that are of people having to go to the polls.
You know, Joe, I've got a column out there this week saying that Trump is going to pull us. I think this is a prelude to what he's doing. For those seniors who are in their homes, the second letter about doing a vote by mail campaign, you know, nature abhors, you know, when there is nothing going on. And I think, in fact, that's what's going to happen right here. We're going to see a lot of ways to do this. But do I think Trump is capable of calling off a national election? Absolutely, I do. And this is all prelude to that.
Mike?
Yeah, you know, Alan, I have to say, I've listened to the letters that have come in over the months and maybe over the years with people suggesting that Trump will come up with a way to avoid an election and declare, you know, himself continuing as the president past the election day. And I always thought those people were paranoid and bizarro. But we are living in paranoid, bizarro times. And I think it is a legitimate concern, and that the Congress, which sets the date of the election as the first Tuesday after the first Monday of November, really needs to step in and establish some rules, like you said, a mail system or a protocol, and it can't be left as a fiat by the White House whether to postpone an election indefinitely, which is a possibility if there was chaos. That, you know, after 9/11, New York City had to suspend a primary, which was happening that day, and have it a couple of weeks later. I think it was a couple of weeks later. Isn't that right, JP? Yeah. And,
yes.
It's necessary to take steps like that, but to let it, now is the time to talk about it. It's legitimate to talk about it and make sure that there's enough protocol in place so that something awful doesn't happen.
Judy?
We should note that the across New York State village elections were scheduled to be held this Wednesday, tomorrow. The governor last night issued an order in which those elections have been postponed until April 28th, the day of the state primary. So I thought that was a good call. I didn't have a problem with the Ohio governor delaying this because it does seem like it's a true health emergency. I realize that he's a Republican and there's, you know, the indications that maybe he's just trying to mess with the Democrats. But I think turnout is definitely going to be low today because especially older people who tend to vote, they're scared to go out of their houses, and we need to recognize that.
It's a good point, Judy.
I think I agree with Alan. I do think there are two issues here. One is the Democratic primary. I think the Democratic Party, Bernie included, Bernie needs to, I think, endorse Joe Biden and make him the nominee. If there are votes and Bernie saying, I still have a chance, it's the longer it goes, the more fractured, the less you take on Trump. So I think the party needs to get together. Bernie needs to drop out and pick a nominee. Then there's the second thing, which Alan was talking about, which is the election in November. And I think there needs to be planning now for what would happen if we needed to do a national election from home. And Trump has no incentive to do that. Trump thrives on chaos, and he knows that.
All right. JP's breaking up a little bit.
But I'm sure, Joe, that our crack engineering staff will correct that.
I know they're working on it furiously as we speak. So we'll just hold on for a second. Let me just go through some of these letters. They have interesting points, and I just want to get to them. We begin with John, who says, let's take a deep breath and try to look at something positive about this pandemic. Some of these people sitting at home will turn to creativity. We could see new and novel art and literature. Introspection may lead to more Americans to finally become critical of our extreme form of capitalism, unsustainable concentrations of wealth, etc. Well, that is a ray of sunshine. I don't know if I'm ready for it yet, but okay, I'll take it. Colin says, it seems like COVID benefits Biden as he comes across as the more, quote unquote, stable option compared to Bernie's revolution, also, quote unquote. But does anyone seriously think that Biden could handle COVID any differently from Trump or Obama when it comes to bailouts of major industries, which have been spending all their free cash on stock buybacks for the last 2 years? Would he push to restructure the healthcare industry in the ways that are so obvious now?
Well, you know, if it happens on your watch, Joe, you own it. As I mentioned Herbert Hoover before, he owned the Depression because it happened on his watch. There are many people who think he didn't deserve it, but he was there, he got it. I think there's lots of things one could blame Donald Trump for, and it may well be partially his fault that this has not been handled well, because if you handled it better, maybe we would have a better outcome. But in any case, it's on his watch, and he owns it.
To that point, Ian says, Alan is right. Trump is the new Hoover. Ever since the massive tax cut, I have been calling this era the Gilded Age 2.0. If officials are not able to bail out the American people from the possible economic hardships that many will face, we may begin to see Trump's version of Hooverville. Have a great day, and thank you for staying on the air. Russ,
one of the problems with these proposed tax bailouts is the lack of specifics about exactly what they're going to do. We don't know what's happening, and a lot of time the devil's in the detail. If they're going to forgive student loan debts, what exactly does that mean? If they're going to give the airlines $50 billion, exactly what does that mean? Is that any of that money going to trickle down to the workers? And so, as one who is in favor of sunshine during Sunshine Week, open government, let's get some specifics out there and let people know exactly what is being proposed. I'm not seeing any of that at this point.
We just got a letter from a listener who is being very optimistic. We got this letter from Russ, who counters that, I think. As of yet, we have only about 1,000 identified cases of coronavirus in New York State. We still know nothing of the prevalence of the disease. It will still be weeks before we know the severity and extent of measures required. Most of us won't even know for sure whether we have the illness or just a bad cold. We're in for a long, scary ride. And, Mike, it seems that way. I mean, it does seem like there's a lot we still don't know.
Yeah, I think Governor Cuomo said it yesterday, but it was quoted yesterday that it's estimated that perhaps 10 to 15 times as many people have the COVID-19 than have been tested and shown to have positive, you know, be tested positive. And that's a reasonable estimate. You know, if there's, 11 people in Albany County, there's probably something like 100 to 150 in Albany County that have been exposed and have contracted the disease. And that is, that speaks to that. Now the, I think it's important to be optimistic at the same time realistic. And you can't, we're faulting Trump for trying to be optimistic, but it's not up to them to be optimistic. They have to tell it like it is. And I got to tell you, Andrew Cuomo tells it like it is. He, a week ago, was predicting the kinds of grim steps that have taken place since then and saying they would be necessary, and they are. I'm worried about what's the next step. You know, I want to hear what Cuomo has to say today, because I think he's out in front of this. It doesn't do anybody any favors to sugarcoat it. And at the same time, I think it's really important to be optimistic and look for some kind of light in this. And afterwards, looking back at this, whenever that may be, and I hope it's sooner than later, We will do an assessment of how we handled it. And did we give the bailout to the big companies again and leave, you know, did we bail out Wall Street and forget Main Street? And I think that's the conversation we have to have now.
You know, Judy, you were talking about Governor Cuomo and his press conferences earlier. And to what Mike was just saying, this idea, one of the things that Governor Cuomo keeps saying in his address is look, I'm acting in regards to the facts of what I know. That is what is driving this train is facts. I realize in many cases that is political hyperbole, but in this case it really does seem to be the case, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the difference, I think, is that Andrew Cuomo has credibility in this scenario, and the federal government does not have that credibility. I too look forward to his news conferences because I know that I'm going to get important information. I know, and I know where he's coming from, and I believe he has the best interest of New Yorkers at heart. But that's what that's what credibility does. And if you don't have credibility, which President Trump does, he doesn't have it, at least with me. When he talks about things leveling off in July and August, I don't know where that came from. We know we've been fooled way too many times. Maybe Tony Fauci, maybe I'll trust him, but Andrew Cuomo, I can take what he says to the bank, I hope.
JP?
In crises like these, I remember back to Hurricane Katrina when the New Orleans mayor, Ray Nagin, you know, you were listening to his press conferences and what he was saying much more than President Bush. And I think that Andrew Cuomo is kind of taking that lead in the media, kind of like Giuliani during 9/11 or Chris Christie during Hurricane Sandy or Ray Nagin during New Orleans. Americans are listening to Cuomo and the media is paying attention to him and his daily updates and what he is suggesting. I agree with Judy.
Only difference is one of them ended up in federal prison.
Ray Nagin?
Yeah. 10 years, I believe, in federal prison.
Right?
Yeah. Well, bribery and money laundering and wire fraud, but you know. But he was really good during that time.
He was. That's what counts.
That is the irony of all this. You can have leaders who have failed miserably on a lot of things, but when a crisis comes along, they step up, and that is what defines them. I mean, just like George W. Bush, you know, you can talk about all the things he did with the tax cut that he did in 2001 or two, you know, the war, you know, getting us in a war in Iraq when it had nothing to do with 9/11, and go on and so forth. But after 9/11, when he went to Ground Zero, he stepped up. And that defined him. And, you know, it mitigates the Katrina moment, which he blew, but it really is how he'll be remembered over time. And even if people don't agree with him, they're going to remember that. And the same for Reagan, the way he stepped up with after the Challenger explosion. He brought the nation together and gave them purpose. And there was just one thing about I wanted to add is that, you know, we're short of all kinds of medical supplies. After we got into World War II and we were rallied by FDR, American factories were turning out planes for the war at the rate of 11 minutes each plane. You know, that we did 100,000 planes over the course of the year. I think we should be able to gear up our industry to produce masks and ventilators that we're short of, that we're going to need. It just seems like, why isn't someone leading that march?
Very good point.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We have a ton of letters, and we're going to continue with those. We have a lot to talk about. We understand there's a lot on people's minds. And we also just found out that Tom Brady's leaving the Patriots, so the hell are we going to do with that news? a good day to announce it. It's going to be completely lost. Anyway, we will be back right after this news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Just a quick note, as far as what's coming up this morning, we are expected to have a COVID-19 briefing from the White House with Vice President Pence coming up at 11:30 this morning, and we do plan on taking that live. It was originally scheduled for 10:30. It's been moved to 11:30. Also, the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, is expected to speak at 10:15, and we're doing everything we can to bring that to you. So if we're trying our best to bring that to you, if for some reason we can't, we'll certainly report to you as to what was said, but we're going to try to bring you the actual announcement coming up in just a few minutes. So, with that in mind, we are going to go through as many letters as we can here in our time. And here we go. We go to Chuck, who says, I'm glad you're addressing the tip workers, another large group of musicians and other independents who do gig work. Most of my professional musician friends have lost 100% of their entire income. How about a hold on all mortgages, credit card payments, etc.? Let's ask the banks to help bail out the people, as the people through our government have bailed them out in the past. Well, that's an interesting point when we're talking about bailouts, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah, it's a cool letter. He's absolutely right. We did bail out the banks, most of them, not all of them, but we did bail out the banks. And there is no question that at a time like this, when stability becomes so important, I mentioned this before, you know, you've got a potential real revolutionary time here. If enough people are not being fed, if in fact we can go back in history, we can see what happens when this kind of thing happens. It's a very dangerous time, and it is a time when Mitt Romney talks about $1,000 to every American. He's just not whistling about it. He knows what he's talking about, because there are going to be an awful lot of people who can't afford groceries. I believe, by the way, for whatever it's worth, that this is the worst situation that it is in my 78 years that I've ever seen. This is right up there. We don't have people on the firing line. We don't have a World War II going on. But we have the most dangerous situation I've ever seen. I don't know if anybody disagrees with that.
You know, Alan, I think it's a really interesting point, because, I mean, I was just thinking in my own life that, I mean, 9/11 was always the event that I looked to. And,
sure.
But 9/11 was it was horrifying, but it was contained, and it was in three places, and it affected us all, and obviously it was tragic. But this is, to your point about war, I mean, this really is a world war against this virus, which I think is what makes it so scary and not knowing, so uncomfortable as to what the future holds, because as I think we've all learned over the last couple of days, nobody really seems to know what's going to happen.
And you know, Joe, when we see things like rules falling by the wayside in the past, in order to get an antiviral agent or in order to get a vaccine, it would have taken months and maybe years to get going. We're moving fast here. The question is, are we moving fast enough?
Anybody else want to jump in on that?
Yeah, you know, I think
Mike
Judy. Go ahead.
Okay,
oh,
Judy.
Okay. I'll go and then you can. the point you make about this in your lifetime, Alan, is really impressive, because think about all our parents and maybe for some our grandparents whose lives were defined by the Great Depression, all their economic decisions,
right,
all their attitudes, all their political positions were defined by the pain they saw and the experience they had as America went through an unbelievable time of poverty and unemployment and desolation. And I hope that we're better prepared to keep that from happening, but it's going to take very decisive action, very direct action on the part of the leadership of this country to keep that from happening. But still, I think no matter what, this will leave a lasting imprint on people, how they plan, how they prepare, and how they spend their money, how they save their money, and how,
right,
you know, it will define people going forward.
That's right. Them and their, and I know I'm interjecting before somebody else, but not only them, but their kids and their grandchildren. I mean, my kids don't remember the Depression, and they're in their 40s now. But boy, when Uncle Dave slept on our couch on 96th Street, I'm going to tell you right now, it left a permanent impression that this is what was going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, I grew up with parents who obviously went through the Depression, and I mean, I was brought up, look, I still call my refrigerator an ice box, so that gives you an idea of the elderly nature of my parents. So,
me too.
But, you know, to Mike's point, I mean, I sort of grew up in that shadow of, you know, my mother has all these cookbooks of, you know, rationing and everything else. I so wish, my wife and I were talking last night, I so wish they were around to sort of help guide us through this, because it seems like, a lot of us feel like we're on uncharted territory, but obviously, different circumstances, but they were living through many of the same things too. Judy, you were next.
So it is an incredibly scary time, and you just want it to end. But, you know, one of the things I'm trying to do is not obsess about the news, to be informed, but then to break away and do something else with your day. You know, read a book, listen to a podcast, do something, because you can't obsess with it. You'll go crazy.
Ladies and gentlemen, is coming from the vice president of the New York Press Association.
Who is I'm a news junkie, and I have to get away from it. Or, I just need to take a walk. I need to, you know, do something else, cook something new, especially for the kids. You can't let the kids be in front of the TV all day, especially if they're watching, you know, scary things.
I was talking to a guy whose kid has started to bedwet during this time, these kinds of fears get transmitted to everybody.
Yeah, anxiety is a very serious health risk, and depending on who is anxious, it could have even a more devastating impact. So managing that by managing your consumption of news is advisable. I think the media has such an essential role right now, and it's so tragically sad to me that the whole idea of fact-based media reporting and coverage of the news is injured by the last 4 years and the assaults that have been made on it by the president and his allies that call the mainstream media, whatever that is, the enemy of the news, the enemy of the people. It's really had it hurts, and it's tragic.
I agree with Judy and Mike. You know, we've touted Andrew Cuomo a lot, which he deserves it, but I am so impressed with Alan's friends over at the Legislative Correspondents Association in Albany and all the reporters throughout the state and the country providing. It's amazing how much information they're able to provide in such a quick amount of time. And also Judy saying, you know, only consume so much news in the day. I agree 100%. Someone who I work many days from home every week. And, you know, I think a lot of New Yorkers now are doing that today. And I would advise everybody to dress every morning like you're dressing for work. That makes you feel like you're doing stuff. And find a dedicated place to work if you can, and get out and walk twice a day, and definitely limit your consumption of news. I agree with Judy 100%
you know,
on that.
You just addressed something, JP, that I was wondering, because you're all doing this from home today, so you're all fully dressed, right?
Well,
all right, you all keep your secrets. It's theater of the mind. It doesn't matter. We are expecting to have the press conference or the announcement. I believe it's being called an announcement. I don't know if it's a full press briefing, but it is an announcement that we are expecting to take from the governor. We'll be going to that momentarily. In the meantime, let me just read some letters to bring us up to that point. We go to Kay, who says, does the panel know of any efforts to compel internet and cell phone providers to suspend data overage charges with so many families out of work and children at home 24/7? I'm shortening up the letter a little bit, but, you know, it was an article that moved last night on the New York Times website about is our internet infrastructure ready for so many people working from home and learning from home? And I think it's a great question and a great point. And one, and probably an answer we don't really know.
Yeah, and another big user of bandwidth is a streaming service. Like they say, on any given evening, Netflix is taking 75% of the bandwidth across the country. This is prior to all this crisis. So people are going to be watching a lot of movies and watching a lot of TV. And if they're streaming, it's also going to be conflicting with all this. It'll be a test, and we'll find out.
Yeah, we will. We'll find out. Tom says, what I will remember about Trump coming out of this crisis are his words, I take no responsibility. I'll vote for someone who assumes the responsibility of holding the office from day one and every day thereafter. It's those words seem like they could come back to haunt anyone.
What did Harry Truman say, Alan?
He said the buck stops here. That's what he said.
I'm from Missouri, was what it said on the other side of that sign.
I am a great Truman lover. I know that there are others who feel that the dropping of the atomic bomb was, you know, the worst thing this country ever did. But I have to say, this is a guy who came out of a different time and had a different way of approaching politics than so many of the jackasses who are around now.
Carl makes this point, which is on point from what we were just talking about. Who would have thought that when this century's biggest challenge hits, we'd have a leader almost wholly without compassion, one who has never endured hardship across an entire life? Keep showing us the high road, panel. We can all do this. Then we go to Joel, who says, my neighbor has a brilliant idea. Donald Trump, in spite of altruism and humanity, should offer his hotels and resorts to the medical community for use as temporary hospitals. Well, good luck with that. Also, Stacy says, I've read if there is no presidential election before the end of Trump's term, the Speaker of the House becomes the acting president, that it's in the Constitution. Does anyone on the panel know if this is true?
I'll take it.
Okay. You'll take it? Just the idea? Or?
The president's term expires on January 20th, 2001. I'm sorry, 2021. So there's nothing in the Constitution that says it would extend it. I think it would be up to the Congress, though. They could intervene and do something. There was a brief period after the election of 2000 that was being contested right through December, where
right.
Bill Clinton said there was precedent for him temporarily continuing as president. The Congress wanted that while this was all, you know, worked out. But then the Supreme Court voted 4-3, and that was that.
And weirdly, that sped things up.
But Clinton claimed there was a president for the Congress to keep him in power.
But
and
of course,
I don't think the Congress now could ever agree. But it depends on what happens in the election. The election could shift the Congress.
Right.
And that's the Congress that would have to decide.
Well, yes and no. This could be a putsch. This is a time when you can imagine that even though the Constitution may say one thing and our expectations are one thing, this president says, sorry, it's a time of crisis. I'm not leaving. Does anybody think that this guy who has gone this far along wouldn't do something like that?
I mean, not to extend this and not to verge on conspiracy theory talk, but I mean, isn't this going back to what we were just talking about before, Alan, of that it may come before that and the canceling of the election or even the primaries?
Well, do I
okay.
think?
Yeah, we I'm just sorry. Noticed go that ahead. The governor is speaking, so we'll go to that right
let's,
now.
Let's go.